Well, first off, I want to acknowledge a passing. Drake Hogeston, who played John Black on Days of Our Lives for nearly 40 years, died recently, just a day shy of his 71st birthday. My mom and sister used to watch Days of Our Lives. Actually, my sister still does. And I totally remember this guy. Charismatic, cool-looking, but more importantly, he seemed like a truly nice guy. If you remember, I met him in the elevator, the very same elevator in Santa Monica that I ran into Goldie Hawn in. And the guy just seemed totally nice, down to earth, and had like a genuine vibe. And what a cool name, too, Drake. I love it. So anyway, I guess he was a hell of a baseball player when he was younger, and he played for the Yankees' lower-level minor league teams, but then he got injured. So anyway, I wish his family the best, and rest in peace, Drake. And I had just mentioned Kris Kristofferson last week, and then he died. Jesus, I'm going to stop mentioning people. I mean, he was 88, so it wasn't like a huge surprise, but damn, maybe I have some weird powers. So Stacy Keach, please stay healthy. And if I could predict someone's death, who would I pick? Which actually reminds me of the 2017 movie Death Note, actually a remake of a 2006 Japanese thriller based on the comic book manga series of the same name. The 2017 version is directed by the pretty talented at times Adam Wingard. It has Nat Wolff as our lead, a high school student who discovers a supernatural notebook where if he writes someone's name in it, they die. The movie also has William Dafoe and the recently mentioned The Substance's Margaret Qualley. And related to The Substance, hey, give this number a call, 323-310-5332. You may get a kick out of it. It's kind of a tie-in to a movie that I just mentioned. And way back in the day, like in the 80s and 90s, in Northern California, you could dial popcorn or 767-2676, and a phone service would tell you the date and the time. And you can actually still dial 415-POPCORN and see what happens, although there's some ads and shit on it now. Anyway, I do remember Death Note being shot pretty well with some fairly, like, well-done graphic violence. The lead actor is a little bit of a dud. The movie ain't great, but give it a shot. You may find it mindlessly enjoyable. And quickly, back on Kris Kristofferson, I kind of dig 1984's Flashpoint with him and another deceased hero of mine, Treat Williams. They play two border policemen who find an old Jeep, a skeleton, and a shit ton of cash. It doesn't go well. It has, like, you know, noir elements, some Western vibes, a kind of forgotten movie. Try and check that out. Now, briefly, let's speak of Megalopolis, or Messalopolis, or whatever clever name you can come up with, for Francis Ford Coppola's latest, which I honestly was rooting for. I mean, one of our big-time directors going for maybe one final big swing. And man, he did, but it's a big miss. And I was expecting a little bit more energy or audacity or interesting visuals, but it kind of doesn't even look great. The script is lacking. It's way too fucking long. There's some really bad casting and bad direction. And honestly, I don't think there's enough interesting stuff in it to even recommend seeing it. I mean, the last maybe 30 minutes are the best part, and that's still a pretty low bar. Shia LaBeouf looks terrible in it, and his performance is pretty bad. John Voight looks and acts confused. Adam Driver is a complete dullard to me. Even Aubrey Plaza puts in a not great performance, though she does get a little bit better as the movie progresses. And it's funny, the newer version of the movie poster has Adam Driver holding a glowing protractor or some architectural tool, and it kind of looks like he's holding a lightsaber. So maybe like one or two people are like, hey, look, it's Kylo Ren. Let's go see this new Star Wars movie, Megalopolis. It kind of feels in a way like it's the most expensive home movie ever made. And like I said, I went in looking for things to like about it. Really, I did. And really, I just wanted it to be over with. So I think it's almost time that we take away Francis Ford Coppola's director's license. I mean, I love that he really went for it, but what a misfire. And it's got to rank up there or down there as one of his worst movies ever. But I will always respect the vision and the drive of Francis Ford Coppola. It's just now his vision has glaucoma. So every once in a while, I do an episode on interesting things I've recently read in newspapers or magazines. I call it Shit I Found Interesting. So let's see where this goes.
You are my density. You are my density.
And as they say, your mileage may vary on this episode. But what can I do? I'm trying my best here. But it's going to be random as hell, so strap in. I came across a couple newspaper terms while reading the newspaper. The slang term for births, weddings, and deaths is hatches, matches, and dispatches. Very clever. And while I was in high school, we had possibly one of the dumbest phrases ever. Clever, clever, toilet lever. And also in the world of newspapers, there are HFO orders, which stands for hold for orders, meaning articles written and edited ahead of time, ahead of like certainly highly anticipated news events, you know, which is a pretty smart thing to do to get ahead of the curve or whatever. I'm sure they have obituaries already written, but also anticipated conflicts and whatnot. And of course, politics in Washington, D.C. is always heavily covered in newspapers. The Washington Post is still one of the great newspapers of our time. I read a couple recent quotes about the world of politics. Someone said, "This is classic Washington, D.C. If you don't like the way the table is set, flip the table." And one of my absolute favorites, the Ragin' Cajun himself, the political consultant who helped launch the sleazy Bill Clinton, James Carville, had a recent quote about the power and perils of Washington, D.C. "That's why the only way people leave Washington is in a pine box or in handcuffs. This power stuff is addictive." And Carville has a quote which I absolutely love. He was talking about the U.S. House of Representatives member James Comer, and he started off by saying, "First off, Comer's a nitwit." I love that phrase, nitwit. It's so good, and it's so rarely used these days. And I read an article on the longstanding presidential taboo of having a beard. The last bearded man elected president was Benjamin Harrison in 1888. The last president with any facial hair whatsoever was William Howard Taft, elected in 1908. And the last major party candidate to try and break the clean-shaven streak was Thomas E. Dewey, who had a goofy little mustache on his upper lip, and he ran unsuccessfully for president in 1944 and 1948. Yes, he of the famous incorrect early edition of the Chicago Daily Tribune with the headline, "Dewey Defeats Truman." Herbert Hoover wittily said of Mr. Dewey's mustache, "A man couldn't wear a mustache like that without having it affect his mind." Facial hair has long been associated with the rural lifestyle or kind of the countercultural. And facial hair can be seen as hiding something, perhaps just a weak chin, perhaps more. One of the worst facial hair experiments of all time was Al Gore's foray into beard growing. Some guys grow a beard after having an existential crisis of some kind, and Al Gore grew his around 2001 in the aftermath of his messy presidential campaign. Gore's beard was like a bit too manicured, and he kind of looked like a member of NSYNC or like Backstreet Boys. And as I have previously mentioned, I had a mustache once for about 4 hours. I didn't even leave my apartment. I had the good sense to realize it looked like shit, and I shaved it off before going outside. And to wrap up this political section, I read during Abraham Lincoln's presidency, like anyone could come to the White House to see him. Some with problems, others simply wanting to meet the president. I mean, can you imagine? That totally blows my mind. Okay, let's mention some medical news. I read an article about some interesting disorders, including Anton syndrome, where a blind person is convinced they can see and they can speak at length about whatever they believe to be seeing at a given moment. And Korsakoff syndrome can cause people to have fake memories of things that seem as real as memories of things that actually happened. And a scary one is Capgras syndrome, which gives someone the belief that a loved one has been replaced by an imposter. Wow, the human mind can be a fucked up place at times. And here's one to file under, you needed to do a fucking study to figure that out? The headline was, "High doses of Adderall or Vyvanse may raise psychosis risk, study says." It's like, yeah, no duh, we've known about amphetamine-induced psychosis, oh, ever since amphetamines have been around. You take enough high doses for long enough and you will soon lose your shit. Amphetamines will give you energy and some euphoria in the short run, but in the long run, they take away so much more than they give, and they will leave you burned out, dull, and unable to feel pleasure. So as Sergeant Phil Esterhaz used to say in the morning roll call on the TV show Hill Street Blues, let's be careful out there. Sergeant Esterhaz was played by the actor Michael Conrad, who I always dug as a kid, and I got his autograph along with a few others from Hill Street Blues, including Bruce Weitz, Joe Spano, and Daniel J. Travanti. And we've mentioned the allure of drugs before, and man, drugs can turn you into a different person. You get addicted and you will soon lose yourself and your dignity in the process. I read a great quote, "When a loved one is addicted to drugs, it's like they've been bitten by a vampire. They never stop plotting what they can take from you to support their habit. The same person who, before drugs, you would have trusted with your life becomes someone you wouldn't even trust with your purse." And Kurt Cobain fell victim to the ravages of drug abuse, but he had some insight on the situation. Drugs are a waste of time. They destroy your memory and your self-respect and everything that goes along with your self-esteem. They're no good at all. And sometimes it seems like people just accept medical dogma. You know, sometimes alternative viewpoints can yield answers. I read an article about conventional wisdom, and someone said, asking questions has become forbidden in some circles, but asking questions is not the problem, it's the solution. And this article ended with a story of Ignaz Semmelweis, the Hungarian doctor who in 1847 said that doctors should wash their hands before delivering babies. Sounds pretty, you know, logical, right? And for making this claim, he was somewhat denounced by the medical establishment. He lost his job and he ended up in an insane asylum, dying there, ironically, of sepsis, the very disease that he was trying to fight against as a doctor. I mean, sometimes you can't make this shit up. Another article quoted Harvey Cushing, the father of neurosurgery, as saying, good judgment comes from experience. Experience comes from bad judgment. We need to know that we don't have all the answers, especially in psychiatry. No one basically knows shit about that, to be honest. And briefly on my experience in hospitals, every once in a while you come across a patient that's just receiving unnecessary and prolonged medical treatment, when really they should just be comforted and be able to, you know, feel less anxious and just be able to die peacefully. And man, I get it. It's hard for families to make that call. But sometimes as an outsider looking in, I'm just like saying to myself, please, guys, can we please stop all this stuff? This is bordering on torture. And at this point, you know, just people, some people get old and they die and it's never fun. But you have to be able to say, okay, we've done all we can do. It's time to stop this aggressive medical treatment, and it's time to just ease the way for this person. I mean, I always do my job, but sometimes I'm just like, what are we doing here, man? This doesn't feel right. And I'll never forget the movie from 1982, Dr. Butcher, M.D., an Italian horror film with a mad doctor played by Donald O'Brien performing experiments on both the living and the dead. There's zombies, there's cannibals. The film was originally released in 1980 under the title Zombie Holocaust, directed by Marino Girolami, but some unreleased footage from another film was added, and thus we have Dr. Butcher, M.D. in 1982. I remember it being fairly bad, but I have a sweet spot for Italian horror movies. They always have such shocking moments, and I ate it up as a kid. And speaking of Italians, I read about this Italian priest who spoke up against the mafia, and he survived an assassination attempt a year or so ago, and he said he wasn't afraid, and he's quoted as saying, my revenge is love, my shield forgiveness, my armor mercy. Well, I can't say I would be able to live up to those ideals, and I would prefer actual armor, but still a badass quote, no doubt. Now here's a sad story turned happy. Some Frenchman spent 8 years constructing a 24-foot model of the Eiffel Tower with 706,900 matchsticks. But he used the matchsticks without the flammable sulfur heads, and the Guinness Book of World Records said he was disqualified at first. But later on, they admitted to being heavy-handed. Funny term, considering the light-handedness needed to build the structure. And they awarded him the medal. Okay, a couple funny quotes. The legendary Zsa Zsa Gabor once said, I am a marvelous housekeeper. Every time I leave a man, I keep the house. And here's a couple silly quotes. The comedian Olaf Falafel, great name, said, my dad used to say to me, pints, gallons, liters, which I think speaks volumes. And a clever one that you have to think about for a minute from the comedian Luke Rawlinson said, my whole family are psychics. I was born with the gift of hindsight, I realized later. Isn't that good? I read the Red Lobster exited bankruptcy recently, and there was an article all about its decline. And the Red Lobster, you know, isn't great food, but the goal of the original restaurant was admirable, to bring seafood to landlocked areas at affordable prices. And at first, there wasn't even lobster on the menu. That was too pricey. But the guys that opened up the first Red Lobster just liked the sound of it, so that's what they called the restaurant. And if nothing else, the ever-expanding American patron loves all-you-can-eat menus and buffets and whatnot. I mean, just look at how big we've physically become. And what led to Red Lobster's downfall could be summed up in two words. Endless shrimp. I mean, you put endless on any menu item in the U.S. and it's going to end badly. I mean, people will go to the restaurant and they won't fucking leave. As a former employee of Red Lobster so perfectly said, endless shrimp brought out the worst in people, which is about a perfect summation of the United States as I can think. And the Red Lobster has a new CEO or whatever. We will see what happens. But if you want people to get decent wages, sometimes food just has to cost a little more. And maybe there needs to be an end to some of this all-you-can-eat bullshit. As they say, there is no free lunch. which was more or less said by the economist Milton Friedman, who was kind of a turkey. Ultimately, I think he believed in the importance of shareholders rather than society, but anyway. Okay, let's slowly wrap up this random episode with some mentions of technology, of course, Elon Musk and some animals. Okay, get this. The writer George Miller Beard has a book from fucking 1881 called American Nervousness, Its Causes and Consequences, a supplement to nervous exhaustion. And neurasthenia symptoms included brain fog, anxiety, headaches, chronic fatigue, insomnia, and indigestion. And Beard thought modern civilization and the pace of life and technology was pushing the human machine beyond its natural limits. And this was in 1881, guys. He mentions the use of pocket watches as a cause of nervousness. The watches compel us to be on time and excite the habit of looking to see the exact moment so as not to be late. A nervous man cannot look at his watch without affecting his pulse, and the effect on that pulse, if we could but measure it and weigh it, would be found to be correlated to a loss to the nervous system. I mean, holy shit, this guy was onto something. Replace the pocket watch with the Apple Watch or computers or phones, and this pretty much nails our lives today, distracted, anxious, tired. And it's only getting worse with every new technology that Silicon Valley and its ilk pull out of their asses. I've been actively trying to look at my phone and computer a bit less these days, and I completely avoid some of the newer AI intrusions as much as possible. I never and will never use Siri, and I try to use modern technology, but I kind of keep a 1990s mindset, if that makes sense. And there's a new, unwanted, unnecessary AI tool that iPhones will have, and that's automatically making an edit on a photo to remove any distractions in the photo, which sounds awful to me. I mean, those weird moments or imperfections in photos is the point. The weird framing, the unknown person in there, the unusual object sitting there. That's what makes photos and life interesting, not some edited, sanitized, artificial version of a photo. Man, I just don't get it anymore, I swear. It seems like all this new technology is completely the opposite of what appeals to me, but I'm a dying breed, I suppose. So I read a clever joke about how these AI tools learn by basically snatching up everyone's personal information, search histories, and other shit. So a machine learning algorithm walks into a bar. The bartender asks, "What'll you have?" And the algorithm asks, "What's everyone else having?" Cleverly done, that one. And my dislike of Elon Musk is obvious, and there's a new book about him with one of the best, most well-done titles that I've ever seen. It's called Character Limit: How Elon Musk Destroyed Twitter. Written by Kate Conger and Ryan Mack, it's a pretty damning portrait of the pettiness and obtuseness of Elon Musk. And it seems like Elon Musk's golden touch has lost its power with Twitter, and a recent New York Times editorial said his use of Twitter has become a poison chalice, saying Musk spent a fortune on the largest megaphone he could find, only to discover that the more he shouts into it, the fewer people are listening. But I mean, the title of the book, Character Limit, is just priceless. Now let's mention a couple interesting anecdotes from the animal kingdom. And did you watch the French movie The Animal Kingdom yet? Please do, I swear it's amazing. But I read that marmoset monkeys use distinctive whistles to address specific monkeys, kind of like how humans use names. I guess bottlenose dolphins and African elephants also use noises to address specific other dolphins or elephants. I mean, I love this idea of a monkey basically being like, "Hey, Scott, come over here." I mean, that fascinates me, and it just goes to show you how the inner worlds of animals are probably way more complex than we give them credit for. And I also read about the Greenland shark, which is the longest living vertebrate species, which can live for about 400 years, and get this, they reach sexual maturity around age 150. Talk about a late bloomer, the 150-year-old virgin. So I think that's about it for this one. Hopefully some of this stuff was interesting. And I'll end with a quote from some obituary about a guy who wanted to be an actor, but he never quite made it, but he also never gave up. And again, the number of listeners to this podcast waxes and wanes, mostly wanes, to be honest, but it keeps me busy and sane, more or less. And I do appreciate everyone who listens. But anyway, the quote was, "I guess his film career didn't work out for him. But I admire him for having at least tried to follow his dream. It's hard to be professionally successful at doing the things we're passionate about, so most people don't even try." And I think in trying, you really are doing, in a way. I mean, to try is to do. Like my personal friend Yoda said, "Do or do not, There is no try.